You know, is this a season, if we tried everything we can, and might we need some help? Is coaching something that is worth giving a try? Parishioners, they hear what we do and say, oh, you should be in the seminaries. You should be in the seminaries. And I love seminarians. And then they become associates and then they become priests. And I often say, I find with these men, and maybe it's men in general, probably go for me double. You just think you have all the answers. And until you try everything you think is necessary and realize there's more, but you just don't know what else, where else to go. I don't know if that coaching makes sense. You know, it's like, I'm not ready to learn from you guys, or I don't feel a need to for more information. I know what needs to be done. I just have to do these things. And it isn't until sometimes we've tried everything that we realize sometimes that it's like, I believe there's more. I'm not burnt out yet. But I have nothing else, no other solutions to bring to the problems that I'm facing. And I think that's the place where coaching might make sense.
Welcome to the Huntley Leadership Podcast, helping leaders be a positive catalyst in the people they support, the organizations they serve, and the communities they live. This podcast will make you think, laugh, and grit your teeth with new determination to make your parish or business a place of transformation, passion, and purpose. If you're still breathing, you are powered for impact.
Welcome to a special edition of the Huntley Leadership Podcast, where today's focus transcends the conventional boundaries of leadership and ventures into the sacred halls of leadership coaching. I'm your host, Ron Huntley, and I'm joined by my Australian colleague, Lorraine McCarthy, as we embark on a journey into the heart of leadership within the Catholic Church. In this conversation, we delve into the noble calling of priests and bishops, exploring the unique challenges that they face in their ministry, from the weight of expectations to the daunting task of leading renewal. We uncover the crucial role of coaching in supporting our spiritual leaders. And together, we'll share insights into the transformative power of coaching, emphasizing its ability to reignite the joy and devotion inherent in the vocation of the clergy. Discover how to recognize the right moment for you to seek guidance. Coaching can mark the beginning of a rejuvenating journey where effective leadership emerges, bringing with it transformation and profound joy. This is the Huntley Leadership Podcast. Transforming leadership, transforming lives. I'm really looking forward to diving into this topic. I think it's an important one as we record this. It's even the beginning of 2024. I don't know when people will see this, but I always find there are different times of the year that are natural new beginnings that ask us, get us asking questions about what we want to accomplish in this next season. And so, Lorraine, it's great to have you back in the studio again.
It's great to be here, Ron.
Tell us a little bit, Lorraine. I've been working with you for probably 5 years now, and it's been just a joy. But as I got to know you, I realized, oh my gosh, you've had a lot of experience working in ministry in the church. Can you tell us a little bit about that, how long you've been at it, and maybe some of the things you've come to believe about priests and the clergy?
I've been working in parishes, very active in parish ministry, probably my whole life. But began in my probably 30 years ago to work a little bit more intentionally in parishes, and I've worked in paid roles a number of times as pastoral associate and even a bit of a stint as a lay leader in a pastoral parish in the absence of a priest, which was interesting. Mm. I've also worked for Alpha Australia and for an archdiocese supporting parish renewal. And during all of that time, I have met and worked for some amazing men, men who have such a love for Jesus, and they really want to make a difference. They want their ministry to make a difference. They want their parishes to grow people and bring them closer to Jesus. And I'm just so in awe of what our clergy take on. As they accept their calling, I guess, and the wonderful work that they do.
I just, as you're saying that, I think to myself, I know exactly what you mean, because I see the nobility in so many of these men. Like, they take on way more than their fair share. And often don't complain. Like there's this nobility, there's a strong, there's this current of strength in these guys that they carry a lot more than many could, or even many times than they themselves should. But they do it out of love and devotion to Jesus and his church. And it's pretty cool.
Yeah. And what about bishops, Ron? Do you notice, what do you notice as you're working with bishops?
I'd say much of the same thing. One of the neat things with bishops too is even how we choose bishops in the Catholic Church. It's not like, hey, there's a job opening. I think I'm going to apply. Like that's not how it works. They choose you. You don't choose them. And so oftentimes the men that are chosen are people who are exemplary in character, amongst peers. And so they're usually unbelievable men. Like the bishops that I get to work with are all wonderful role models in many ways in faith and faithfulness. And they're amazing men. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I think one of the things I see, and it even came up as you were just describing what you've come to know about priests and what they want for their church and what they want for people. So often I see bishops really wanting to love their priests and wanting their priests to be healthy and enjoy their vocation and be fruitful. But I often see a gap in the, yeah, but how? Mm. Like how? And I think the how is the hard part. It's kind of like, you know, growing up in the church, I always heard, you know, we should share faith, we should evangelize. And it's like, okay, but how? And so there's a lot of inspiration spoken through homilies. And so I knew what I was supposed to do, but I just didn't know how. I don't think we're as strong on the how as we are on the what.
And I guess too, we don't need to be very conscious of what's happening in the world to kind of know that in the Western world we're seeing a declining church and Christianity. Mm-hmm. What do you see here with bishops? What's it like for them? What are the mm-hmm. problems that they're facing?
Boy. This is going to be a 2-hour podcast. I say that tongue in cheek because one reason I say that is because their role is so hard. Like it is way harder than people think. And that's often the case. Any work in the church is way harder than most people think, but it's also way more rewarding. And so I wouldn't change it, but if you think it's easy, think again or give it a go. And so with these bishops, it's tough because, you know, they often become a bishop of a diocese they were never a part of. And so they start by not knowing anybody and then having to build trust. And, you know, sometimes that's really exciting because maybe it was, you know, that previous bishop, you know, they had their go and there's anticipation and hope that there's a breath of fresh air and anytime in any role whatsoever. In business or the church, when somebody new comes, there's new hope. But I think you don't know what it's like to sit in that big seat until you get there. And once you get there, you realize there's a lot more moving parts. There's a lot of demands on your time, a lot of people who have expectations of what you should do or what a bishop is or what they need from you or what the last bishop did. So there's a lot of external pressures and expectations on these men. And you can get lost in the whirlwind of ministry. And sometimes, you know, even though they have a heart for renewal, a heart for their priests, a heart for the faithful, sometimes their schedule gets jammed up doing things that aren't necessarily aligned with the things that would be necessary to bring that to life. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard, you know, it's hard, you know, it's one of the myths about the church is how loaded it is and how that much money they have. But, you know, I remember going to an event, speaking to some bishops a couple of years ago in the U.S. and it was a wonderful event. And, you know, just during break time, we're speaking to a couple of different bishops who just went through, the whole diocese went through bankruptcy. And so as they're trying to wrestle with their finances and stuff, and so a lot of times they're trying to do a lot with less, or they have a lot of buildings but not enough priests, and you know, nobody wants to let go of their church, and everybody wants mass, and so there's, in many ways, they have a model of church that in some cases, in some dioceses, isn't feasible, isn't, you know, can't go forward with any health, but yet the expectations are, don't you dare let this go. And so they have to make a lot of difficult decisions and wade through that stuff. So there's a lot on their plate to manage. And with that said, I've never met a bishop who isn't in love with Jesus, in love with his church, and want what's best for everybody that are under their charge. But it's hard. Yeah. Mm. That's and you're, you know, with your work even at the diocesan level, like, was that super easy work, or like, what was that like for you? Like, because again, you're not a bishop, obviously, but working in a diocese, working, you know, within the bishop's vision, how was that for you?
It was great that we had a bishop that had a very strong vision when I was working in the diocese, and that was actually really exciting. And I think that the clergy that we were working with, because our role was a parish support role, the clergy that we were working with were actually pretty pleased that there was a direction that they were being asked to go, because I think there's a lot of pressure on priests, a lot of pressure from their parishioners. They sometimes feel pressure from the diocese, and there's all this talk about new evangelization and making disciples, and they want to do it. Like, they want to have that impact, but they feel overwhelmed. They feel that they don't have enough resources, that they don't have anyone that has their back. So I think it's really difficult. I came to see just how difficult it is for our clergy to be trying to lead this in their parishes, because the diocese can decide whatever it wants to decide it wants the clergy to do, but they have to do it. And often they feel a bit lonely, a bit overwhelmed. Yeah, all of those things I was just saying. It's tough. Mm. It's really hard.
Mm. Yeah, sometimes they feel misunderstood or underappreciated. Mm. Yeah. You know, I know sometimes bishops have a heart for their priests, but they don't have a structure that allows care to be given, because their dioceses are really big. And so that was hard. And sometimes you have auxiliary bishops that aren't sure what their job is really, other than to do confirmations, or you have deans that are running deaneries, but, you know, they're just running boring meetings and haven't really been given a mandate that really captures their imagination and extends the care of the bishop. You know, so there can be structural issues. And it's part of the reason we want to have this conversation today is to kind of open up what we're seeing and sharing with you guys to help you discern or determine, you know, is this a season? Have we tried everything we can, and might we need some help? Like, is coaching something that is worth giving a try? Because, you know, I think sometimes, you know, I'd often get asked, Lorraine, it's kind of funny, like, oh, you know, parishioners, oh, they hear what we do and say, oh, you should be in the seminaries. And I love seminarians. And they become priests and then they become associates, and then they become priests. And I often say, I find with these men, and maybe it's men in general, probably go for me double. You just think you have all the answers. And until you try everything you think is necessary and realize there's more, but you just don't know where else to go, I don't know if that coaching makes sense. You know, it's like, I'm not ready to learn from you guys, or I don't feel a need for more information. I know what needs to be done. I just have to do these things. And so with a lot of vim and fervor, they go at it based on the very things that they think are going to make the biggest difference. And of course we do. Like, yeah, go at it. And it isn't until sometimes we tried everything, we threw everything at renewal that we had in our tank, that we realize sometimes that it's like, I believe there's more. I'm not burnt out yet, but I have nothing else, no other solutions to bring to the problems that I'm facing. And I think that's the place where coaching might make sense. And so even as people listen to this, you know, they're probably, you know, who knows where they're at in that cycle or that continuum of spending themselves on the battlefield of renewal in the Catholic Church, you know. But the I think the other side of that too, or maybe as that extends further, if we get to a place of unfruitfulness or decline, and we stay there too long, we can get burnt out, jaded, and then it becomes hard to coach too, because then you don't want to learn. Like, you just have no energy left. Yeah, you've lost hope. Have you ever seen any of that? Like, when I say these things, does that make sense or resonate with you?
Oh, it certainly does. And my heart goes out to, I can just think of a couple of priests at the moment who that's their story. They've tried so hard for so many years, thrown everything at it, and still over that time and over their ministry, just seeing church, their parish, steadily decline. And that must be so disappointing and so hard to keep going when your heart just feels a bit broken. And no matter what you do, it doesn't seem to make a difference. So that's a really tough place to be. And sometimes as lay people, we can criticize these men and say, you know, they're not trying, or, you know, we often criticize them, but really they're doing the very best that they can, and they've been doing the best that they can for years and years and years.
Yeah.
And it's hard. Yeah.
It is hard. You bring up a neat perspective to it in terms of the impact on lay people, you know, because there's lay people too, they're disheartened. And it's like, darn it all, you know, maybe they're on a leadership team or a parish pastoral counselor, or they raise their kids in that church and none of their kids go to church anymore. And it's like, they're pulling their hair out. Like, doesn't anybody care? Like, how come we can't collaborate in a way that gets momentum and pushes back this tide of decline? And that can be disheartening for them too, right? Sometimes the people want the same things when it comes to clergy and lay people, but we're not always speaking the same language.
True.
And that's painful for them too. And so, yeah, maybe there's lay people listening to this on Teams and it's like, ah, we need help. And yet at the same time, it's like the pastor's not there yet, or the pastor's saying we need help, but I don't think the people are up for it. And timing is everything. But you know what I find interesting, you know, since I started coaching, geez, I don't even know how many years ago now, but when we started, I don't know that anybody else was doing this in the Catholic space. You know, when I started with, Father James and I went out with Divine Renovation and went from a book to a ministry. And I just thought, gosh, our next level of impact isn't going to come from just growing our church bigger. It's going to come from helping other people to get their churches healthy. And I remember him saying to me, do you think you can do it? I don't know. I'm willing to give it a shot because we care so much about the church. And so off we went. And you know what's funny about that is when we started, I remember we had 11 churches. Back then, there's just so many cool programs now, like Calendly, that's automatically takes into account time zones and schedules. But back then, Anne Marie was taking people's phone calls, figuring out our calendars all by hand. And it was a nightmare. That's how it started. But of those 11 churches, partway through the year, I realized something significant is happening. And I couldn't put my finger on it because I thought it was just going to be an exchange of information. But I knew it was more than that, but I couldn't put my finger on it. And I started to daydream, like, what if some of these churches wanted to stay on for a second year? And I remember thinking to myself, I have no idea what we're going to talk about, but I seem to think there's value beyond the exchange of information. And so as we moved closer to the, you know, by about 3 months before they were ready to, their term was over, and I had a waiting list. We had a waiting list by then, and I was the only one coaching. And so I just asked them, if you think there's value and you'd like to stay on, we'd love to have you. But that wasn't our expectation. And so it's okay, but if you do want to stay, just let me know, because if you don't, we're just going to fill that space with somebody on the waiting list. And much to my surprise, and I told them straight up, I don't know what we're going to talk about. I don't have a curriculum. Of those 10 of them stayed on for another year. And the one that left sent me 4 more parishes.
Wow.
And that's when I realized, oh, something's something's happening here. And many of those churches I coached for years and years, because the thing is, as people evolved as leaders, as they became more fruitful in their ministry, as they learned how to lead out of teams, mobilize people for ministry, and really start a movement of transformation in Jesus, and then leadership and service, the nature of the problem shifted. You know, I always say, you know, as leaders, you know, you solve one problem, you create two more. Your problems don't go away, they just evolve. you have new problems. And so through each of these phases, I think the nature of the support changes. And what I've noticed since then, and I wonder if you've seen it too, like a lot more people, a lot more apostolates have gotten into this space of coming alongside clergy to provide this help and support. Are you seeing that?
Yeah. There's quite a lot of organizations now, isn't there, that are seeing this need in our church and are, you know, generously giving their time and their energy. There's conferences, isn't there? And there's books, there's podcasts, there's all kinds of things. And I think it's really a conversation that the church has needed to have for a long time, I think, about supporting people and talking about renewal. And I just think it's so exciting that there's so many people involved in the space now, and there's room for all of us, isn't it? It's just lovely that
it's a big church.
Yeah. And, you know, every apostolate has a different kind of gift to give. And I'm really excited to kind of listen to and hear people talk into that space, because we need it. Our church just so desperately needs it, doesn't it? What about you, Ron? What are you seeing?
Yeah. Well, it's been fun too. Like, even this podcast has been a platform where I've been able to get people like that on the podcast and talk to them and hear their passions and the different types of language they use that's different from what we do. And I'm really excited to be able to showcase that for the world, because my hope is that, you know, if we didn't have work because churches were doing so well and people were coming to Christ, that'd be the best day ever.
We've got great beaches in Australia. I don't mind going there.
It's true, and you have a nice place to enjoy those beaches. And so it's our goal is really to see the church renewed. And so I'm always thrilled to see more and more people getting into this space. And the nice thing about that too is, you know, it's kind of like a, you know, maybe a good hairdresser for ladies, or what is it for guys that we like, good mechanic to fix our cars. Like, when you find somebody you can trust, when it's a good fit, you know it. And you're much more likely to go further, faster with somebody who you connect with. And so the fact that there are different options out there and opportunities, I think, is great for the church, because the principle of coaching in itself is interesting and relatively new. Don't know how many times when I'd introduce myself to priests or bishops, they'd say, "Oh, never heard of anybody doing that," you know, years ago. But I think more and more people are doing it.
And so, as you're doing it, Ron, what are you seeing?
As I'm coaching?
Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the things I see time and time again is this hesitation or this reluctance or this thing. People hear about what we do long before sometimes they get involved in what we do. And so there's should I, shouldn't I, you know, is this for me? Isn't it? What if it's a mistake? What if I don't like it? And so there's this, should I, shouldn't I? Because, you know, there's a cost associated with it. And is there going to be value with the cost? And so I understand how people feel in terms of, is this going to work for me? I remember joining CrossFit years ago, and I knew about CrossFit years before I ever joined. My friends would always ask me to join, and I just thought, oh, I've got so many injuries. What if I get hurt? What if this doesn't work? And it took years before I did it. But when I did it, my fitness level went through the roof, and I accomplished so many goals that otherwise I wasn't able to accomplish. And so I was so glad I did, but I knew what it felt like to have reservations. But what other priests have found, they felt the same way, but what they found was, as they jumped in, it wasn't as scary as they thought. Because one of the work that we do within Huntley Leadership is really to meet people where they're at. It actually starts around people. It's not something that we just hoist upon you from upon high, or we pull it out from the back room and lay it on top of you and say, this is what you are. Now, it's the complete opposite. It's from within, to understand the people that we work with and then begin to celebrate how they're fearfully and wonderfully made in the image of God, understand their leadership styles, their charisms, their gifts, and then build teams around that that help focus on evangelization and leadership, and then bring good leadership and sound principles to the five systems of a healthy parish. And so, again, I think people feel hesitant. I think people can relate to that. But as people take that jump, I think what they find is that it's exactly what they needed. And I think that's borne out in how we end up coaching people for years. Like, so we enter into 1-year agreements with people. With diocese, it's usually a 3-year term that we jump into, because they're usually bigger scope. But with parishes, it's a year, and very, very, very rarely have I ever coached somebody for a year. We usually coach them for multiple years. So nobody would renew a coaching agreement and pay her, money for something that didn't bring incredible value. Because I also say too, if something's free, nothing's free, because your time is worth something. And so if there's no cost associated with what you're doing and it brings great value, good on you. But if there's no cost associated with what you're doing and you go and it doesn't bring you value, that's actually quite expensive, because it uses up your time and your time is limited. And so, one of the questions I often ask, or we often ask after a coaching session, is on a scale of 1 to 10, what is your assessment of value for time spent? And we always want to be measuring that on every single coaching call, because if we're not bringing value, we have to figure it out. Because every coaching call has the opportunity of transformation and impact and incredible value. And if we can't bring that to our clients, then we're not doing a job, or it's not a good fit. That's okay. But so what I find is people are reticent, but when they finally make that commitment, it's the best thing they ever did. And they're transformed. I always say, Lorraine, there's two things that fill my bucket time and time again. One of them is that priests renewing the joy of their vocation, like finding afresh the joy and the power of their vocation. Nothing makes me happier than seeing these men who have sacrificed much for the love of Jesus and his church rediscover their vocation.
I remember a conversation I had once, Ron, with a priest here in Australia who will remain unnamed, but he had been probably on the coaching journey for maybe about 18 months. And Alpha was starting to grow. He'd done a lot of things, but we were eating lunch and he started to cry. And I said, what's going on? And he said, for the first time in my priesthood, and I think he'd been ordained maybe 15 years or something, he said, I'm starting to see people excited about Jesus, excited about their church. They're looking after each other. He told me a story of someone who had in an alpha small group who had a cancer diagnosis, and how the other people in that small group had wrapped themselves around this family and looked after them. And he said, this is why I got ordained. And he was so moved and so excited after probably years of hoping for something like that. He said, this is what I got into it for, and I haven't seen it before now, and this is so good. So I know exactly what you mean. It's just amazing to see the excitement as things start to move, isn't it?
Yeah. That's so beautiful. That reminds me of a story working with a priest he'd been a priest probably 30 years, and we'd been working together for 2 or 3 years. And the bishop called, and he never heard from the bishop. And so when a priest who never hears from the bishop hears from the bishop, they get frustrated and angry and defensive because they think they're going to be in trouble. More often than not, it doesn't mean they are going to be in trouble, but that's where their fear goes. Like getting called to the principal's office, it's like you don't think you're going down because you received a reward. You're always afraid you're going to get through. And so I was talking to him on a coaching call not long after he got that call, and he was venting. And he was really upset. And so after I listened for a while, I just said, okay, I'm going to tell the bishop this, and I'm going to tell the bishop that, and I'm going to tell the bishop that. And so I listened. And then I said, okay. I said, may I ask you a question? He said, sure. I said, do you know what the bishop's transformation story? Do you know his encounter story with Jesus and what drew him into the vocation of priesthood? No. I said, oh. Fetch, it's a cool story. You might want to ask. I said, well, do you know his heart for the diocese and what his dream is if you guys are fruitful and successful? And he's like, no. I said, oh, okay, well, that might be interesting. And so then he started to realize what I was getting at. He wanted to tell, but he didn't even know his bishop really. And so his head went down. He said, okay, I get it. And I said, so let's say you did ask and he shared some of these things, you'd probably grow closer, wouldn't you? And he said, yeah. And I said, and what if after that he looked at you and he said, hey, Father, what do you want to tell me? What would you say? And it was a very different answer than what he said at the beginning. He said, Ron, I just want him to know that I've never been this fruitful in my entire priesthood. And I'm so happy and I'm so grateful. And I just want this for my brother priests. It was just such a tender moment from him going from frustration and defensiveness and fear and a rant to this place of softening and seeing kind of his heart transform for the bishop and then what he would say. And it was so beautiful. And that's the key. You know, so often, Lorraine, I think people, bishops and priests alike, you know, when they think about coaching, it's like, good, yeah, I'm going to get you in to fix these people, you know, whether they're my parishioners, they're just too busy, they don't get involved, they don't give enough, they don't serve enough, they're not in love with Jesus enough. Yeah, we're going to fix them. So I'm going to get your help to fix them. Or the bishop's like, yeah, we're not going anywhere. We need your help. We're going to fix our priests. And I'm exaggerating the point, obviously. But the truth is, the person that changes the most in coaching is always the people we coach. And as their leadership transforms, as they see themselves differently, as their identity starts to shift, as they take responsibility for outcomes and fruitfulness, and as they start to become more intentional and skill up, they start to get the results. Actually, they don't just start to get the results. The results they get usually far exceed what they ever dreamed or hoped for.
So what is coaching then? What happens? What is it?
One of the things that, you know, sometimes people call me a consultant and it always makes me bristle a little bit. I don't feel like a consultant. I like to differentiate too. In fact, I had a consultant on the other day. Was that a podcast or just a conversation? Now, maybe I was just meeting somebody, but I said, you know, how would you define the difference between coaching and consulting? And I thought it was a really good differentiation. They said, well, a consultant studies you and your organization and then tells you what to do so you can do it. But a coach joins you in the battle, like they're on your team. And I thought that good, because that's exactly how I feel. I am not a consultant. I don't have all the answers and study all the data that you have and then tell you what to do as if I know what to do. It's like, I see it more like a sports coach in that, you know what? You want to win a championship. What's a championship? Make disciples of all nations, right? To help people fall in love with Jesus, be filled with the Holy Spirit, and spend their life on mission. And hopefully that'll bless their marriage, bless their parenthood, bless their, you know, business or career or whatever. It should bless everything. And so if that's what winning looks like in the kingdom of God, then it's like, okay, well, then we have to build a championship team out of you, the pastor, who's like the lead goal scorer for playing ice hockey. I'm Canadian, so I have to use that. People in Australia have no idea what I'm talking about. right? They're like the star player in many ways. And we have to build around them so that, you know, the whole team knows how to contribute in ways that we can push back the trends of culture. And so coaching really is seeing the best, speaking the best, and calling the best out in clergy and their teams so that we can win the day for Jesus. Yeah. Mm. How would you define it? Do you do anything different?
I think there's also something around, I liked how you said the coach jumps in with people. And I think, you know, what I've noticed in people who have been coached, it's almost, you know, there's they have a passion, that's why they're being coached, they want to make a difference. But there's always, I feel, a sense of almost relief that they're talking with somebody who gets it.
That's a good point.
And that person is on their side and they've got an ally. And often that's what people don't feel. They feel like they're battling on their own. So as the coach comes in, comes alongside, seeks to understand them first in a very customized kind of way, and then helps them if they don't already have a team to get that team around them. And I think I've seen, you know, relief, almost an excitement. Yes. So I think there's something there around that ally, which is really important, and somebody that can help you get a bit of hope about making more impact and reaching your dreams. And you're not in it alone. That's what I notice.
When you say that, I just want to comment because we're one of the dioceses we're working with right now. There's a priest who, is having some health issues, and I got a note from him the other day, and he just said how much he appreciates you because you've been there and you stay in contact with him, and he experiences being cared for you, and you're on the other side of the world, but that's the level of friendship that we develop with these men and care. And it goes above and beyond a job. Like it's, I don't see it as these people become lifelong friends. Most of the time, I'm still in touch with the people I started coaching 7 years ago. They're still at any time we go to conferences and events, we see them. It's just absolute joy. Like you really develop friends. I feel like in many ways, Lorraine, we get to live out Acts of the Apostles. Like I feel like we're so interconnected as a global church. And the more we get the opportunity to work alongside of these great men, the more friends we have in the kingdom and the more alignment there is. There's another fellow that I had on the podcast this year, and you really helped him a lot over the years. And it was during your time with Alpha Australia. But how you came alongside of people and cared for people is far more than just, hey, here's the course, here's some resources, here's how I can help. And he talked about the impact you had on him time and time again. When he felt stuck, you would be one of the people he would turn to have these conversations. And through those conversations and your experiences, sometimes he'd find the next way of breakthrough. And again, that friendship, that problem solving together, the confidence to know that you can talk to somebody without being judged. Like you've been that person for so many of these clergy, and I get to hear it on the other end sometimes feed it back to you. So there you go.
Yeah, as have you, Ron, for so many people. So how does somebody know then if now is the time, like New Year, whatever, is now the time to take this next step? How do you know that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think you're ever fully ready in a sense. Like if you think you're going to be fully ready, you're probably dead wrong. And so now might be your time. Like unless there's something like you broke your leg and you're, although that might even be a good time for more time to think. But, you know, if there's something acute that you need to take care of, then great. But if you think you got to do all these tweaks before you get into coaching because you don't want to be embarrassed with where you're at now or anything else, like forget all of that stuff. If you believe there's more and you're not jaded and burnt out. You have hope. You believe in the power of Jesus, and you really have tried a lot of the things that you thought would work, and you're running up against roadblocks or you feel stuck, then get coaching while you still have hope. You know, if you're beyond that, you haven't made it this far in the podcast. You probably don't even listen to any of our podcasts. But if you have hope and you believe more is possible and you feel stuck, then that might be the time for you. You know, another way too, and I know some of the people that we've coached, Lorraine, have, you know, they've read some good books. There's a lot of great books out there now. You know, I know we read Rebuilt. It was one of the first Parish Renewal books we read. And I laughed my way through it because they were so honest and it was so funny and just such wonderful people. And that inspired Father James to write Divine Renovation. And that book went crazy and did really well and started our ministry, started me in coaching. It was wonderful. So many other books have been written since. And so maybe you've read a book and you've started to apply some of the principles, or maybe you've gone to a conference and backed up your reading with some more formation that way. Or maybe you've even taken courses. Like, way to go. Like, there's lots of steps on the way. I know we do a course called Parish Leadership Course for Pastors. And anytime people have taken that course, I always say there are four possible outcomes at the end of it. Either you've listened to, we've had this journey together. It's done in a cohort scenario. You've had that journey together and you get to the end and you go, wow, that's really neat. You've learned what it takes or started to get some insight into what it takes to renew a parish and go in a missional direction. And you're thinking, I'm not interested in doing all that work. In which case, well, at least you've made some new friends. You can deny you ever taken the course and go back to doing what you've always done. Like, that's a viable option. And I wouldn't say I blame you. You know, I think the second type of person is able to take the information that we wrestle with and the learnings and say, you know what? I have a lot of support around me. I have a lot of capacity myself. And I think we got this. So I'm going to start implementing this stuff with the people around me. Maybe you have the support of a diocese and some staff there. And you're going to go about on your own, see how far you can go. And I think, have at her. Like, way to go. And then there's some other people who say, you know what? This has been amazing. Love the principles. I do want to go at it. But you know what? I've been at this a while and I'm still, something's wrong. I'm missing something because I can't get the breakthrough that I know I want. And I know maybe coaching will help. And then they'll join us in deep dive coaching and sign up for a year. Whereas other people, maybe they want to do that, but there's something they need to take care of first, or they need to make sure their assignment is renewed before they jump into a round of coaching in that particular parish. But they know they're going to do it when this issue gets resolved. And those are the four ways that I think people find themselves wrestling with next steps and whether coaching's for them. But when people take that course with us, Lorraine, if they've been reading books and trying to implement this stuff before, almost always they say, I wish I did this years ago. Like, I wish I did this at the beginning. And that's just the course, never mind the coaching itself. And a lot of times that leads to people, it's very common for people to experience that course with us and then go from that into deep dive coaching, because it's like, yep, I get it. And it kind of starts to make sense of the roadblocks or the places they've felt stuck time and time again when they look back in hindsight. And it's like, no, there's more, and help and coaching is for me. And so what are your thoughts?
So if you decide, oh, I'm going to throw something back at you.
Okay.
So if you're someone who decides that they want to go to one, you know, they've heard this conversation, they've been thinking about it for a while. They think, what do I do now? How do I take the next step? What do I do?
Yeah, well, certainly if you want to give us a try, we'd love to talk to you. Again, we said earlier, there's other people doing this work as well. And so by all means, you don't have to choose us, but we'd love to have the conversation with you to see if maybe there is a win-win situation. And so they can go to our website at huntleyleadership.com and they can connect with us right there. Like, it's all on our website and you can just, it's as easy as a click as a button, fill in your name and contact information and we'll have that conversation with you. And the truth is, like, maybe what you're looking for isn't something that we're a good fit for. And if that's the case, we're not going to start coaching you. We will refer you to somebody else, because if we decide that we're going to get into this together, it has to be a win-win situation, because we want to make the most of your time and the most of ours for the kingdom of God. And so we'll certainly do that. And so I think that's I think that's probably the easiest way to do it. Also, too, you might say, well, I don't know if I want to do the full year. Maybe that course is better for me. Well, you can actually go to the website and click on resources, and you'll see the Parish Leadership Course for Pastors, and you can click on that button, too. And maybe that's a good way to start. So whether it's a conversation, mm-hmm. whether it's a course, or whether it's signing up for coaching, we can certainly help you do that.
And it'll be an honor. We have a cohort starting with the leadership course soon, don't we? So
yes, we do. That's coming up. So, and nice thing is the cohorts are usually between four or five priests. So it's not a big cohort. So you get some really in-depth conversation. The friendships that form from that are kind of fun. Mm-hmm. And again, we want to make sure that if we do that course, that that's a good fit for you too. And so those are things that can get you started. The other thing too, I want to say, Lorraine, If there's a layperson listening to this and you're thinking, oh, I wish my priest would do this stuff. Like, oh, this would be so much fun. And they don't want to do it. Pray for them. You know what I mean? Like, 'cause I've had priests join Deep Dive Coaching because of the absolute passion and desire of their leadership team. And it's not ended particularly well. Because the priest's heart was never in it in the first place. And I know that's frustrating. There's probably other ministries. If you want to talk, I can help you. We can help you. We're probably not for you in terms of that deep dive coaching, because you can't force your pastor or your bishop to do this. If they don't want it, it actually doesn't work. I have some friends, family members that are, try to quit smoking from time to time. So they go through great hoops to quit smoking. And it's usually because somebody else in the family has been nagging them. And it never really works. And I find coaching like that too. You have to want it, because it's work. It's great work. Like every time, actually. You'll say, I wouldn't do it any other way now that I've experienced it. But until they experience it, they don't know. But it is work. And it's work for the pastor. It's work for the leader. It's work for the bishop. It's work that brings meaning and purpose, which makes it very worthwhile. And then it has impact for the kingdom of God. But boy, anything substantial is going to take sacrifice. And if you're not willing to sacrifice, you're not going to get to a better place. And so it's hard, because sometimes lay people want it so much for their priest or their bishop. Talk to them, pray with them, share this video with them, have conversation, give it a try. Maybe the course would be a great place for them, because it's not too much commitment. But maybe those would be some steps that would make some sense. Yeah. What do you think of that?
I agree.
Yes, that's wonderful. Well, it is a wonderful conversation, and thank you for having it with me, Lorraine, because we do notice that people wrestle with this thinking and these ideas, and truly many people feel the same way. But when they join, what they realize is how they felt before made sense, but what they find in it is that this is working. It's transforming their leadership. It's putting joy back into their vocation. They start to see, like that priest that you were saying, just overwhelmed with emotion as he thought about how his church was coming alive. People were caring for each other, falling in love with Jesus and being filled with the Holy Spirit. That's what we're here for. That's the heart of your vocation. And if you're not seeing that, it's okay. But geez, don't settle for that. We can do better, and we'd love to help. Mm. All right. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you all for listening. I hope this has been helpful. We would love to hear from you. Go to that exact same website and hit subscribe, because there's going to be some big announcements coming this year. This is a big year for us. I'm really excited. So join our subscription list. We'll send you the odd newsletter, and we'll also give you the announcements as they come out. You're going to love that. And if you're watching us on YouTube, we'd be so grateful if you would hit that subscribe button. That'd be fun. We'd appreciate that. Or if you're listening on Apple Music, then rate the podcast. All those things really help. And we love hearing from you. And so if you have any questions about this episode, send them to us. And Lorraine and I will get back to you. God bless you. And we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
I want to encourage you, as you lead this week, be faithful to God and generous to others. See you next time. And remember, if you're still breathing, you are powered for impact.